In track and field, the 1500 meter race requires 4 laps around the track. It's considered a hard race, not just physically, but also mentally. Hang on just a second. The first lap isn't bad because you're full of adrenaline and everyone's racing like crazy. The second lap is harder, but you still have some energy. You're still excited to be racing. You might be keeping up pretty well. Skipping ahead, the fourth lap of the race is very grueling, but you're almost done. The finish line is coming. You want to win. So everyone flat out races with everything they've got, no holding back. Let's talk about the third lap. Absolutely the hardest. A lot of track athletes say you win or lose the race in the third lap. You've been racing hard for a long time, but you're not that close to the end. You can't let up. You can't relax. Everyone is tired. You're tired. Last Sunday, a week ago today, I went to the grocery store. I can see it from my house. And bought 3 bags of Easter candy. At the time of this writing, I have eaten all of the speckled eggs, all of the mixed bag of individual treats, and I have 21 Reese's miniatures left. For the purpose of this sermon, I counted. Okay, make that 20. Go ahead. You can judge me. But I'm going to guess that you too are finding your ways of coping. Good on you if you're throwing yourself into exercise and are hypervigilant about your eating, truly. But friends, it seems to me we are in the third lap and we are tired and cranky. Like the turtle and Klee in our story, maybe we're feeling rebellious or like we want to pinch something. Yesterday's New York Times article called "We Have All Hit a Wall" resonated with so many people I know. It flowed with force through the ministers' groups I'm part of. We recognize it both for ourselves and for our congregants. Brenda Davis posted it on her Facebook page and in the UUCL fellowship group and in the general Slack channel at my request. Thank you, Brenda. The general consensus from the Times article is that we are tired and are having a harder time feeling motivated to get things done. We may be having trouble sleeping, having trouble finding words, or maybe we just feel less interested in doing things. And maybe we feel that we are less interesting. It's hard to have interesting conversation when we're home most of the day, working most of the day, with our children or grandchildren most of the day, trying to be supportive spouses or facing our own mortality or trying to cope with living alone. Or I can't name them all, but certainly when I think of you, I imagine what your life must be like. The longevity of pandemic living warps our sense of time, and perhaps it dulls our ability to find meaningful new memories, because mostly every day is very similar. I'm cranky and less patient. You could ask my husband, but I'd rather you didn't. But I know many of you are too. It's easy to find things to pick at in these days. Maybe these things are to occupy our time, and maybe we're just ruminating about the things that we're picking in our minds. And maybe we do it at home, or maybe we do it with church, or maybe we do it at work, or maybe we just do it with or about ourselves. We may find ourselves wanting to fix things that don't necessarily need fixing, or picking at things that don't need to be picked at, or being critical of things where acceptance and appreciation could be a better choice. It's often easier to focus on the technical changes or technical fixes rather than do the work that's needed for an adaptive change, especially when we don't know what the adaptive change is or what the future will be. You can judge me for eating all that Easter candy. But it's not the time to judge our own worth. It's easy to do, but it's not the time for it. unless we're going to judge it by the fact that we're still here, that we still choose to be present to these circumstances we're in day after day, that we're choosing to return again and again to love as the guiding force for who we are and what we do, for remembering our covenant to keep love at the center of our lives, to keep our covenant as Unitarian Universalist. Poet Ellen Bass writes, "The thing is to love life, to love it even when you have no stomach for it, and everything you've held dear crumbles like burnt paper in your hands, your throat filled with the silt of it. When grief sits with you, its tropical heat thickening the air, heavy as water, more fit for gills than lungs. When grief weights you down like your own flesh, only more of it, a body of grief. You think, how can a body withstand this? Then you hold life like a face between your palms, a plain face, no charming smile, no violet eyes, and you say, yes, I will take you. I will love you again." In these days, we would do well to remember who we are as Unitarian Universalist people of faith, living with things as they should be, and choosing to the leap to what they should be, what we know they should be and can be. Isn't there almost always that leap? We are whole and we are broken. We are fearful and we are loving. We are perfectly imperfect or imperfectly perfect. We are home and also longing for home. We are satisfied and discontented. We are lonely and isolated, and still we belong to each other. There is injustice, and yet we know that love is intertwined with that. We know we must stay in the struggle. Ada Limón offers instructions on not giving up. She writes, "More than the fuchsia funnels breaking out of the crabapple tree, more than the neighbor's almost obscene display of cherry limbs shoving their cotton candy colored bloom blossoms to the slate sky of spring rains, it's the greening of the trees that really gets to me. When all the shock of white and taffy, the world's baubles and trinkets, leave the pavement strewn with the confetti of aftermath, the leaves come, patient, plodding, a green skin growing over whatever winter did to us, a return to the strange idea of continuous living, despite the mess of us, the hurt, the empty. Fine then, I'll take it, the tree seems to say, a new slick leaf unfurling like a fist to an open palm. I'll take it all." Love is no small thing, often not easy. It is a choice, again and again, in the big ways and the small ways. It's in how we treat each other and how we talk with each other and how we think about each other and how we appreciate each other in our families and in our community and in our world. What if this race is a relay? What if we're not in it alone, but we get to hand it off? What if those people who have been vaccinated go volunteer at the food pantry and give some relief to those who have been there unvaccinated all these months and are tired? What if you are looking for a way to fill your day and you do something like that with it? It doesn't have to be the food pantry. It can be anything. Keeping love at the center and loving ourselves is certainly part of that. Love as a choice. And hope also a choice. No small thing, but often what we have to create for ourselves again and again in community, again and again. And resilience is being able to make those choices, choosing over and over to love life, to be present to our lives, to our families, to suffering, to both life and death. We only have to look around, especially in these spring days, to be reminded of how to do this. Leslie Takahashi writes, "Every day we are surrounded by teachers of resilience. The grass which pokes its way out of the once parched earth and exhales its green breath. The birds which return to nest again and again, despite the loss of other seasons' fledglings. The pelicans and ibis, grand birds of the waters, floating placid amid the hum, amid the hum of highways and refineries." And amid it all, you and I, waking and sleeping, eating and breathing, loving despite loss and sorrow, letting go even with the need for comfort and connection, laughing after tears, crying after guffaws, being part of the whole mess of this living enterprise, day after day. Yes, we too are teachers of resiliency. And so today, if I give you my joy as a gift, will you know this as love? Yes, you will, and return it with the gifts of my heart. Tomorrow, if I grant you the rights to share my tears, will you use them to water your joy? Yes, and you'll return what grows in that good nurture to your own door. Yesterday, I did not understand as well that our resiliency lives in each other, in our ability to hear one another without censure. Yes, and to celebrate each time we resist the strangling arms of despair and the allure of cynicism. Each time we return anew to love. Leslie Takahashi. Take a moment to remember who you are in your heart, at your core. Love, pure love. On this day, in this third lap, in this time of renewal and resurrection and resilience, may we too come back to life. May we return anew to love. Blessed be and amen.
We begin our online flower ceremony with these words by Alice Berry. Children of the earth and sky, we are nurtured, sustained, given warmth and light from above and below. Supported by earth's strong, firm crust, we build our homes, till the fields, plant our gardens and orchards. When we turn from self and seek to be aware, we will find holy light in human faces, in blossom, birdsong, and sky. Then earth is truly our home, and we are one with all the earth's creatures, parents of earth's children yet to be.
The Unitarian Universalist Flower Communion originated in 1923 by Dr. Norbert Čapek, founder of the modern Unitarian movement in Czechoslovakia. On the last Sunday before the summer recess of the Unitarian Church in Prague, all the children and adults participated in this colorful ritual. It gives concrete expression to the humanity-affirming principles of this liberal faith. When the Nazis took control of Prague in 1940, they found Dr. Čapek's gospel of the inherent worth and beauty of every human person to be, as the Nazi court records show, too dangerous to the right. And Dr. Čapek was sent to Dachau. But even there, he offered this ritual of communion using sticks and stones with his fellow prisoners. This gentleman died at the hands of hate, but his message of hope, of human hope and decency, lives on through this flower communion, which is widely celebrated today. It is a noble and meaning-filled ritual we are about to recreate. It was brought to the U.S. by Dr. Chapek's wife, Maya, who also became an ordained minister. And the service has spread to many of our Unitarian Universalist congregations, being adapted along the way. The significance of the flower communion is that as no two flowers are alike, so no two people are alike. And yet each has a contribution to make. Together, the different flowers form a beautiful bouquet. Our common bouquet would not be the same without the unique addition of each individual flower. And it's recreated year to year and day to day, looking different each Sunday and each day that we gather. And thus it is with our church community. It wouldn't be the same without each one of us and every one of us. Thus, this ritual is a statement of community. And also true of religious community is that it's not like a store where you go shopping for what you think you want. Being part of a diverse and beloved community means that we open ourselves up to be transformed. We agree that we are willing to be changed in some way by our participation. But here's the thing. We don't always get to select the ways in which we are transformed. We simply are transformed by being in diverse, beloved community. We receive the gifts people bring, and we bring gifts that will be offered to others. We transform ourselves to transform the world. By showing and sharing our flowers, we show our willingness to explore together in our search for truth, honoring differences that might divide us if we feared them. When we meet in person, each person takes home a flower brought by someone else. And in our online version, we each get to share with every other person the visual of the flower we have chosen, or the flower that chose us, thus symbolizing our shared celebration in community. So I invite you now to hold your flowers up or close to you. And I'm going to offer the consecration of the flowers, the blessing of the flowers that has been adapted. The language has been updated, but this is the same one offered by Dr. Chapek. May these flowers remind us, amid diversities of knowledge and of gifts, to be one in desire and affection. May they also remind us of the value of comradeship, of doing and sharing alike. May we cherish friendship as one of the most precious gifts. May we not let awareness of another's talents discourage us or sully our relationship, but may we realize that whatever we can do, great or small, the efforts of all of us are needed to do the work of love in this world. So I'm going to ask you to hold up your flowers or the picture of a flower that you have. And we're going to spotlight each video. And so I would invite you all, if you have a flower that you want to share, to turn on your video and leave it turned on. Because as we spotlight, we're going to move through. And if you change your video, it changes our arrangement on the screen. So leave your video on until we're done with that part. And then as each person is spotlighted, I invite you to look through reverent eyes at those who are here today. Look with a sense of how important it is for each of us to address our world and one another with gentleness, justice, and love. These flowers are a gift that we're offering to each other. The flower represents that person's unique humanity. And therefore, it deserves your kindest touch, your kindest gaze. Let us share in this Unitarian Universalist ritual of oneness and love. And know when you are spotlighted that we will be sending you love and maybe shedding a few tears, because we will be glad to see your face. Okay.